We will go ahead and call the March 2nd, 2023 meeting of the Jacksonville Taxation, Revenue, and Utilization of Expenditures Commission, the True Commission, to order. Mr. Clements, we have a quorum.
We do.
Excused absences?
None that I know of.
Right. I do know that Mr. Henry's in transit. I'm going to review the minutes of the February 9th, 2023 meeting. Appear to be in order. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
Second.
All in favor? I forgot to have us introduce ourselves, so we will begin. Mr. Tyson.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC 4, Commissioner.
Dr. Chambliss, I'm True Commission under the City Council President appointee.
Raymond Day, I represent the Southeast CPAC, member of True Commission, serving as Vice Chair, presiding until the chair arrives.
Jeff Clements, council staff.
Tommy Carter, council auditor's office.
All right. We have on the agenda a capital improvement program discussion. Are we going to do that, or should public comments come first?
You can do either.
All right. I'd like to move public comments up. So, Mr. Nooney, do you want to make any comments?
Sure. My name is John Nooney. Name and address continues to remain on the roster. You know, I've got to give Jeff props for the, you know, for the minutes. But you know what I want to talk about? I've been coming here. You know, the CPACs, or you all need to be investigating the waterways. We're just getting absolutely crushed. And what I just want to talk about is, you know, the resiliency. You know, I went to the city council meeting the other day, and there was a piece of legislation, 2023-0083, had to do with the LaSalle Street and the appropriation, you know, of $900,000, you know, of our property tax money. Now, I'm in support of that. Okay, it made a lot of sense. But at the same time, let me just also share with you that, you know, I went to the committee meetings. And again, 2017-160, public participation. You know, the citizens are getting crushed when it comes to participating in that. But it was an emergency. And right here it says the city appraised value for the subject property is $480,000. But the seller will not accept less than $900,000. So you know what? You go and you pull up the property thing, and you know what? It's like $250,000. So, I mean, who gets, you know, the boo-boo on that one? And, you know, here's another thing, you know, with the CPAC. You know, I live on Pottsburg Creek, you know, and, you know, it is an environment. There's EPB cover-up. I mean, we could do a movie on that place. I'm next to a FEMA house that should have been demolished. And, you know, right now, you know, even for the Attorney General, Eric Ike Eichenberg, you know, with the EvergladesFoundation.org, you know, I've been banned on the St. John's River Keeper Facebook page. And also, I went to the recent CPAC meeting, and Mr. Day, you can back it up on this. I sent information to Rosemary to share with the CPAC 3. And you know what? She told me I can't distribute it to the membership. Are you kidding me? I mean, I've never heard of anything more preposterous than that. I can't share with my CPAC in this that my property, which is, you know, it is wetlands galore. I mean, it is the potential for the city or any, especially with resiliency. You got hundreds of millions of dollars. That is the biggest buzzword, you know, in the nation right now. So anyone can buy it. And, you know, so anyway, you know, that is just a sidebar to really a lot of other things that are just going on within this community. And so anyway, my time is up. You know, again, you know, even find, investigate the waterways, you know, come out, I'll show anybody, you know, the place. And
Mr. Clemens, are we allowed to ask questions of public presenters? Mr. Nooney, thank you for your comments. I have a couple of questions for you. All right. So let's talk about CPAC Monday evening. You're aware that if you have a business, you can have your business qualify to be a member of CPAC. Are you aware of that?
A business? No.
Yes, you are permitted. So if you have a business, you could become, your business could become a qualified member of the CPAC, and you could represent it before the CPAC. So we've gotten through public comments. I have a few questions, and then I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Chairman. So, and let me talk to you, the appropriation for the property in San Marco, that is to be used for a pump house, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Yes, and I'm okay. In full support.
All right, let's finish. So there are two ways to do this. The city can institute eminent domain proceedings, which involves extensive and timely litigation. And it may have been that there was a business decision made to match the seller's requested price in order to save potential litigation. I don't know that for a fact. I haven't read any of the supporting documentation for that appropriation, but that is a possibility to be considered. I do know that in the early days of consolidation, when Mayor Tansler was the mayor, the city had a practice when we were trying to go out and assemble parcels for the sewage, extending the sewage lines, the water lines, out into the unincorporated parts, which had previously been Duval County. The city had a practice of getting an appraisal and making an offer at 25% above the appraisal in order to save those legal costs and not have to go through eminent domain proceedings. That could be the case here. I don't know. It might be something that you might want to investigate. As it relates to waterways, the only entity which we could inquire about would be the Waterways Commission. Is that my understanding? That's the only city agency that has the ability that we would have authority over under our ordinance that created the True Commission. I don't believe we can audit the Florida Inland Navigation District, since that's probably a state created agency, and we don't have any jurisdiction over state agencies, only things in the city of Jacksonville. Maybe you should write a letter to the True Commission requesting that we take up a review of the Waterways Commission.
Well, find, you know, it goes through the city. So
no,
every
but it's
town,
a state. It's not created by
no,
the city.
The money is collected through the state, but no, I see what you're saying, but again,
I'm not trying to dissuade you because what you do, I know you're very sincere, but we have certain authorities and then some we don't have. If you would look and see, go into the True Commission ordinance, see what power we really have, kind of fine tune your comments, and maybe write a letter to Mr. Henry as chair of the True Commission. And request as a citizen, you have a right to request as a citizen that we take up some matter. He could bring it to the commission. We could have a motion to create such an investigation or review. I don't want to use the term investigation, but I think a review of that agency. And maybe that would shed some light and on some of the concerns which you might have. How does that sound?
Well,
you've got to write a letter, so you have to pick up a pen and write a letter.
I crank out emails to everybody.
All right.
I mean, that's a permanent record. It's where the phone call, that's where you don't want to do. You want the email. And so I have done that. And but again, I really just get back even to the, like I said, even with the CPACs, you know, just just like what you have done, to go through Jeff Clements and just ask a question in that. Well, anyway, there is a whole bunch. I appreciate those suggestions. But again, it's like, how many times have I come and asked?
Okay. If you'll do me a favor, if you write a letter to Mr. Henry, he can present it at the next meeting in April. We can present a motion, we can take it up, and then we can, ask for information relating to the subjects that are of concern to you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I relinquish the gavel.
All right, have we already done approval of the minutes?
Yep. We are now to the auditors. Oh, I'm sorry, capital improvement program discussion.
Mr. Grivey's has impeccable timing.
That was great timing. Thank you. Yeah, Joey Grivey, Director of Finance and Administration and CFO, thank you for having me here today to give you an overview of the CIP process. It's a very timely discussion in that just earlier this week we kicked off the first round of discussions with our departments on building this year's CIP. Kathleen Collins is here with me today. She is new, again, to the budget office. She was with us several years ago, did some time with one of our constitutionals in a high-ranking finance job, and then we were fortunate enough that she landed back with us. So she's now filling the spot that Teresa Eichner most recently filled in the capital improvement side of our operations. So it's part of one of the biggest annual functions that we do in the finance department. We've got seven different divisions. We've got treasury, accounting, budgeting, risk, procurement, IT, fleet, and grants. So we've got 350, 400 people doing lots of different things for the city. We serve lots of different areas around the city through internal services. But the one that's the most visible is the annual budget process. That's the one that tends to make the most headlines each year. Otherwise, we try to stay out of the newspaper as much as possible. The capital improvement plan is very sizable in recent years. It was necessary to catch up from some of the underinvestment that we saw in the community in the aftermath of the global financial crisis and the various recessions that we've been through over the last several years. So we're looking at, in the current fiscal year, I've got a copy here to hand out for the commissioners. Tommy, if you wouldn't mind taking one and passing it down. You'll see that the way we have it laid out is a five-year plan where we've got about $500 million in year one, $400 million in year two, a little over $200 million in year three, a little over $100 in year four, $135 in year five, and then we have a beyond fifth column. The way the process typically works is each year we take a look at that beyond fifth column. We meet with our departments and say, okay, out of everything that is on that list, what do you departments score and rank most highly to move down into the fifth year? And then from there, every year, it automatically slides down. Everything in year five becomes year four. Everything in year four, year three, two, one. So it all automatically rolls forward. If we have any major changes to a project and we need to recommend or advocate for a project to either move up because it's become more critical or move back because maybe there's some design or permitting challenges or EPA or DEP issues that we need to move it back, we can do that too, but we have to have a justification, and we talk City Council through that, and we disclose that in the CIP submission that we do each year. So the process starts now, late February, early March, rolls all the way through June and in July, and then we submit the ultimate CIP that is hammered out between the departments, the administration, the budget office, kind of a negotiated document, ultimately ending in a mayor's proposed CIP that has been blessed, by the mayor's office as the mayor's proposed CIP that gets submitted in mid-July to City Council. From there, it's not over. That's the mayor's proposal. City Council can do whatever they want with the budget, with the CIP. They control the purse strings. So from there, there's a little bit of editing, amending. City Council members sometimes bring up a project that they really wanted to see added onto the list that maybe we didn't know was as urgent earlier in the process. We obviously solicit feedback from City Council members along the way, from the community. Anybody can kind of interject into that process. Our public meetings occur in the month of June, so we have a very public, very noticed meeting where anybody can come and advocate for, you know, any project they want to. Typically, it doesn't happen, you know, very much, but they are out there, and the participant can involve, you know, the public to come in and, you know, make recommendations. So, you know, we've got that, but again, it results in the mayor submitting a budget in mid-July, and then we start our debate process with city council. The council auditors, you know, take a look at everything, try to find any tweaks that are necessary to make sure we're fulfilling all of the minimums that are set in code. There's a few different areas, like, you know, drainage system rehab has some minimums associated with it. There's four or five different categories in code that if we don't propose $5 million, $10 million in a certain area, we have to explain why. But we've been hitting those minimums for the last several years. We haven't had to explain why on much of that. So it's been pretty smooth the last few years. We've been able to handle it. We don't issue debt to fund these projects until we have to. So that's something that we, you know, make sure we hammer home with the Finance Committee. When we submit this CIP each year, we also submit a debt affordability study that shows, okay, based on everything we have pre-authorized on the books now from past years, you layer in everything that we're proposing to you this year, and you assume that we borrow it on kind of a glide path that's become a rule of thumb over time, which we use 50% in year one, 25% in year two, 15 in year three, and then 10% in year four. So we've got like a glide path of assumed borrowing. Now, that's tended to be a very conservative assumption because in reality, you know, certain projects just take longer than others, and we can't. If you authorize $400 or $500 million in a certain year, it doesn't mean that you're going to have $400 or $500 million worth of spending in that year occur in the county limits. We tend to see $100 to $150 million worth of projects typically getting done in any given year, and that's why we don't. You know, the old school way of thinking was, okay, if you approve $400 million worth of projects, go issue $400 million worth of bonds. Well, the problem with that is you start paying interest right away, and if the money's just sitting there, you know, not getting spent on a project, that's consuming resources by paying all that interest that you otherwise could apply to other needs of the government along the way. So we kind of use a just-in-time, you know, cash process, making sure that we utilize the strength of the city's balance sheet to save us money, in that we've got a healthy balance of reserves that we've built up over the last 7 to 10 years. We've tripled them. So that allows us to kind of reimbursement funding methodology, which is where, you know, again, you have spending occurring throughout the year, you know, 80 to 100 million. We advance that throughout the year from cash on hand. We total it all up, and then in mid-July, we start the process of going to the market for a bond issue to fund the projects that were done in that most recent year. So city debt's been kind of, you know, hovering in that $1 billion to $1.2 billion range for the last decade. It's trended lower over the last 7 years as we've kind of focused on paying down debt and refinancing. We've done a lot of refinancing over the last decade as rates have been low. And now that rates are going back up, you know, it's good that we did all that. But you hear a lot of, you know, headlines out in the press about interest rates going back up 7, 8, 9, 10%. That's not what we're paying. You know, we're still in the mid-threes, maybe 4% range. We've got a AA rating on city bonds right now. And that's just about as high as you can go. You can get up to AA+. Some of the agencies won't let you get a AAA because the U.S. government's not even AAA based on some of their analysis right now. So we're a very strong city that's been made possible through, you know, strong local economy, growing local economy. People are migrating, you know, to this area. We've been paying down debt, boosting our reserves. We reformed pensions back in 2017. The pension liability surtax is due to kick in 2026-ish based on current projections. So we've got a lot of positivity going financially. I strongly recommend every year to City Council that we keep that going. Unfortunately, over the last, you know, 7 to 10 years, we've been keeping those trends very much intact, which allows for, you know, more investment in the community through CIPs like you see here today. So that's kind of the, you know, multi-billion-dollar process in a nutshell, kind of high-level summary. But you know, any questions the committee has, happy to, you know, work with you on that, or any informational requests you have as a follow-up, you know, happy as well. And then Kathleen, I've got a hard stop at 4:30, but Kathleen can maybe make it to 4:35, and then she has to go teach a class tonight.
So you want to go? Okay. Real quick and very high level, and maybe your office could supply a handout to educate us a little bit. So in the upper portion, the funding sources, I see debt management, local option, et cetera, grant funding, blah, 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 total of $513,161,000. And then we have the down below, I assume those are the expenditures.
Yes,
for the
those
year.
Are the specific projects, okay. Correct.
And so then I assume that each of these departments and program areas, there's not a total for each of these components, but I assume if we go through and break everything out and add it all up together, it should equal that $513,161.
Correct. And through the chair, as part of our submission to City Council, this is the high-level summary packet. There's also a project information worksheet on every single one of these projects that goes with our submission that details all of the funding sources that go to make up that project.
Right. Would it be possible to get something like that for our review?
Yeah, through the chair, very voluminous. I'll look and see if we already have it posted on our budget division website, and if not, okay, so the CIP book is posted on our budget division website, and it's 400 pages, and it has every single one of those project information worksheets.
So it's almost as many pages as the budget itself?
Correct, yeah. Might even be longer. Tommy, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's very long, yeah.
Right. Thank you so much.
Okay. So my question is, and you may have stated this, but anyway, my question is, how do you get, you know, say for whether you're a city councilman or a person of interest, how do you get this on, you know, a part of the budget? You know, you have a situation you think that need to be going on, you know, some kind of infrastructure that needs to be occurring. How do you get in this list?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I know many of you are involved with CPAC. So we do our as part of our capital improvement building process, we do reach out to CPACs and ask if there's any needs that they're identifying. But the best way to get a project into the annual budget is to talk to the mayor's office, talk to the department director that would oversee, you know, that type of project, and honestly, a council member as well. The district council member is very important to that process. So throughout building the CIP, we reach out to council members and ask them what's important to them. And if they have a project that they are very, you know, aggressively lobbying for, and they've got a lot of community support behind it, a lot of community demand behind it, we very much take that into account when building the CIP, because ultimately we know that our budget and our CIP are only as good as the green buttons that are pressed at the end of the day. So if we can't get those green buttons pressed, it doesn't mean anything. So we take that into account when building the CIP.
There's a certain time of year that we have to request this?
So any time before June is best, and the earlier the better. So, you know, March, April, May, that's kind of like the nitty-gritty of when we're building everything. By the time we get to June, we hope to have most of this kind of in a spot where it's getting buttoned up. Not saying there's not some last-minute tweaks that we make all the way up until the night before submission. I'm very familiar with that. But the earlier, the better. Yeah.
Those submissions should be made through the district council member?
So, I mean, a couple different paths. You know, I'm a member of the administration, so that's one path. You know, you talk to the administration about a project that's important to you, but district council member support's very important as well. Yeah, so either way is a valid path.
Mr. Tyson, you have a question?
Yes. How do you decide, you've got the bucket full of these requests, how do you decide what goes, what area of town, what group of people, etc. How is that worked out so that all the concerns are addressed rather than just how they divide it up so everybody gets equal treatment?
Through the chair to Commissioner Tyson, a former, you know, colleague of mine. So that's a very good question. It's a very complex set of calculus that goes into how we formulate what makes this list of 500 million or 400 million in any particular year. It starts off with very kind of fundamental quantitative and qualitative metrics, which are designed by the departments. Again, we just did that earlier this week, the kind of the first round where the departments come in and say, you know, Public Works comes in, Parks comes in, Fire comes in. So Fire, for example, that's perfect because who doesn't know fire stations? We have fire stations all over the county. And we're adding more and more to make sure we have all the coverage we need. The fire chief is best situated to know, hey, here's an area of town where my response times aren't what they could be if I had, due to recent development in there, that area, maybe I need a new fire station. So he'll come in and advocate for, hey, I know I don't have anything in the Beyond Fifth, but, you know, all this development in this area has really kind of caught me off guard. It's been great to see the community growing, but I got to get a fire station out there, and I need it in year one. And he'll make that pitch, he or she would make that pitch to the committee that met earlier this week, and then the committee would take that into account along with all the other roads and bridges and parks that are proposed and say, well, that one's got kind of safety and quality of life, you know, issues and concerns associated with it, and he's not wrong, and it might score a lot higher than, you know, something else that, you know, is a nice to have, but nobody's going to die, you know, if that doesn't happen. Some people might call their council member and say they're going to if it doesn't happen, but, you know, so you have to kind of take a lot of that into account as you're deciding what is the most important thing that's going to make that final cut. And, you know, just because you didn't make the final cut, you know, 1 year doesn't mean you're not going to get put in year two or year three or year four. But it starts off with a very kind of fundamental departmental analysis of the needs that they're seeing out there. But again, layered on top of that would be, okay, well, the departments are one voice. You know, you've got council members who are boots on the ground hearing from, you know, their constituents, and you've got CPACs, and you've got, you know, other people lobbying things, or maybe there's this other project that just came up, you know, in a recent council discussion that we should look at. So a lot goes into it, but it starts off very kind of analytical. So, yeah, through the chair. So crosswalk murals recently, I believe, have obtained funding through some cultural service grants and things. So that there are sometimes funding sources that can only be used for certain things. So you might say, well, how did a mural and a crosswalk outweigh this fire? Why did this fire station get put in year two and we did some murals and crosswalks? Well, the murals and crosswalks might have a dedicated funding source that came from like a state or a federal grant that can only be used for that. Or, you know, we funded the cultural council who then decided upon a list of recipients of that money and it can only be used for that. So like when you look through the book that we talked about earlier and you look at the sources and uses tab on the project worksheets, you'll see like some have grant funding, you know, associated with them that we can't do anything. Now, I don't know if that is the case for the murals, but that's just kind of an example of why certain things might seem kind of counterintuitive of how did that make the cut? You know. A hardscape? So Steve Long, our director of public works, would be much better to define that for you.
Quick question. I see there's a line item here on funding sources. Find projects. I assume that's the Florida Inland Navigational District project. So that's a funding source. Is that funded entirely out of that millage component in Duval County dedicated to find? Is that what equals $3,795,000?
So through the chair, my understanding is yes. Okay. Tommy could correct me if I'm wrong. Kathleen could correct me if I'm wrong.
Those would be state
grants from the state.
Grants.
Some of them are okay.
And then, so somewhere in the expenditures, there's going to be a matching $3,795,000 of funding.
You'll see that, correct? Yeah.
All right.
I know you have to go because it's 3:33. I'll probably ask you a lot of questions afterwards, but I want to make sure I get this question because you may be more appropriate to answer it. Particularly in the last 2 years. The state and the city have received a lot of federal dollars either through the American Rescue Plan or through potential infrastructure spending. How does the city, when it's coming up with the CIP for the each fiscal year, determine when to use federal dollars or state dollars that they may get through the federal government and when to use debt?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And through the chair of the committee, so we look at all available revenues and sources while constructing the CIP. Our goal is to minimize the use of debt as much as possible. But as it relates to CARES and ARP, there were a lot of restrictions attached. With CARES, all of the expenditure sources that we identified throughout the couple years that we were implementing CARES were all kind of flow-throughs out to the community, whether it was for testing and vaccination sites, mortgage rent utility relief, small business relief programs. We had lots of different programs out in the community that were funded with our CARES allocations. ARP was a little more flexible in that we could utilize some revenue replacement at the county level and do, you know, other things that are legal purposes of the government, like capital. We have recommended to City Council that we retain the last $73 million of ARP money. Some of it's been discussed recently in committees, and $10 million was recently taken from the $73 million to take it down to $63 million. But it was for one of the purposes that we told Council to keep $73 million set aside. One of the purposes was for our waste hauler contract negotiations that we knew were going to go through the roof because garbage is just a big problem and becoming very expensive. So that went through as planned, $10 million. FEMA might tell us no on a lot of our submissions under the disaster relief accounts that we set up during COVID-19. So it's a little different from a hurricane. You know, hurricanes, I don't want to say it's a rubber stamp, but you know, if it's, you can tell that something was impacted by a hurricane, you submit your paperwork, you're very likely to get reimbursed. COVID-19, they might take a more difficult stance with us, so we're keeping a little bit of money set aside for that. And then lastly, you know, in case something else happens, we didn't want to burn all the money on our watch, which is kind of rare, you know, for an administration, I believe, to leave some money for the next person, whoever that may be, the next city council, the next administration to handle any problems that come their way. There's a lot of expenses that are still creeping up. Inflation's a big problem across all of America, but I mean, we're feeling it here too. So we need to make sure we have that flexibility. But we do look at all sources of revenue that are available to us before we just say, oh, just put it on debt. That's never our answer, just put it on debt. We try to utilize every other dollar we can first, but we don't want to burn all of our cash either. It's good to have cash sometimes.
That makes sense for the first, the second tranche. But what about the first tranche, the first $150 million?
So we received,
for, I guess, so for last.
Yes, we received four different allocations under Treasury. We received, you know, two from CARES and two from ARP. The total was pretty big. I believe we provided some documentation to the committee previously. Yep. It was in the neighborhood,
and that's why I'm going to that.
Yeah, in the neighborhood of $500 million or something across the few different programs, but. Again, that most of that went to community support through either small businesses or, you know, citizen support in some way, shape, or form, nonprofits. You know, there was a lot of support built in too there. We did put $50 million towards septic tank phase out in ARP, so that was a pretty big deal, and we dedicated, so that was one big capital item that we used instead of just throwing it on debt issuance. And the other one was Parks and Quality of Life Committee. I think we put another $50 million in for that. So I'd have to go back and total it all up, but we did put in the nine figures aside of our federal relief money for things that otherwise would have been funded with debt. Septic tank phase out's been very important in the community. It's a multi-billion-dollar problem. This is kind of, you know, the first step toward addressing that. And we're doing that through JEA. They're the ones actually doing the work, but we're putting up a lot of the funding for it.
Okay. And then, I know, can I still ask you a question? Because I know you're well
over
it.
Yeah.
one of the biggest pieces
and
of
I don't
the
mind coming back. I just, I had a commitment pop up this afternoon.
Yeah. One of the biggest, not biggest, but it was a major one of contention during the local gas tax debate was ensuring the transparency of the progress of these projects and the ability for the public to be able to kind of go online and see it.
Mm-hmm.
JT already does that with like Mobile Works projects. They're going to do it for the local gas tax projects. Has the city ever thought about doing that for CIP projects as well, outside of going through the 400-page book?
So, yeah, I mean, the way we kind of satisfy the transparency request is through, you know, publishing our book online. We publish both the submitted mayor's proposed CIP and budget and then the final adopted budget by City Council. And all along the way, you know, we have a lot of public debate. Mr. Dooney's very aware of that. You know, he's with us for a lot of those. But so it's a very open, public, transparent process. We did create a website for the city side of Jobs for Jacks as well, with the local option gas tax. I think it's actually jobsforjacks.com www.coj.net, but Mr. Clements can Google it and, you know, tell you the actual website. But we've not done a dashboard like that for CIP, and that's something that could be a good takeaway as a long-term, you know, goal.
Similar to the school board dashboard.
Yeah, because it's I think particularly when you're talking about these large swaths of dollars, for the average resident that lives in Jacksonville, I can look through this and I can understand it, but most people may not be able to kind of discern from it, regardless of the public debate that's able to happen. And it at least makes it simple for people to be able to understand, because we all know that the city website's not the most accessible website in the world, but it does its job.
It's getting better. It's getting better.
I know you're. Mm-hmm. You have to go. So
yeah.
Thank you
well,
so much.
Well, thank you guys for having me, and sorry to have to cut it kind of short today, but wouldn't mind coming back next time there's a topic or along the way throughout the budget process if the committee has questions. Happy to come back.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Good. Very good.
What's next? Yes, sir. Go ahead.
My memory serves me correctly. Mr. Long stated when he was here that the Public Works Department is currently started work on a dashboard in kind of using the school board's dashboard as a
template,
and they're currently working on a dashboard. Able to follow the CIP projects.
Okay. I didn't catch the first part of what you said. Who's starting?
Steve Long.
New director.
Director of Public Works.
Sorry,
if I'm not mistaken, he said that he mentioned that they were, that was one of the, because it was asked of him as well, if I'm not mistaken. We'll go back in a minute to look. But if I may remember correctly, he stated that they had already started working on a dashboard for the Public Works Department.
Okay. Did he give a window in terms of?
It had just.
Just kind of.
Because there'd been other questions asked about it in previous administration. Mentioned that we need to go ahead and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He didn't give me a timeline of when. He didn't give us a timeline of when. He said.
I remember that. You're correct. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Pages to find that.
Wow.
It's like
it is, you know?
Right. I don't think you need to be a CPA
to understand it.
Right.
Beyond 5 years,
but on the project itself, because I know this is one of the items that we wanted, that we had on one of our yearly goals for the year. Now that we've had Mr. Grivey come to kind of explain the process, we had Mr. Long come and explain his end of the process. This is a particular, and I know Commissioner Chambliss and you, sir, were really interested in. Do you feel like you've gotten a lot of information of where you were trying to go, or are there other particular areas that you wanted to look into? You got to get your hands around it.
I still have some questions as to how they. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
How the what?
How they prioritize it. They prioritize.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever speaks loudest.
Still not, yeah, I know what you're saying. Exactly.
So, and I think that was some of the questions that.
Maybe the True Commission could come up with a recommended pattern for distribution of capital improvement funding.
Because one thing I was really interested in, I wasn't sure if it comes up with it's in the 400-page thing, but when he was talking about the interdepartment discussions and the scoring that's attached to each one of the projects, is that included in backup paperwork when they submit it to council, or is that a separate process that is not part of the actual CIP submission?
The mayor presents both in July.
Yes.
And then there are two books that go to the members of the council.
Right. But that doesn't include, like, the scoring matrix or how many projects they considered that didn't make it into the CIP.
Well, that's the holy grail of it.
Yeah, well, that's not what comes to council. What comes to them is this section with all the funding distributed over 5 years, and then a page for each of the several hundred projects that are actually in it.
So does the finance committee, and I'm trusting you here because you're always there, you too, but do council members ever ask or get additional documents or information in terms of how that scoring and matrix has scored certain projects to be on it and what projects kind of got left on the floor?
I have not heard that discussion in the context of a budget hearing. They may ask privately, but...
So,
but if a council member, as Mr. Gravy has said, as a council member has a project that they want, then, you know, if there's funding left over at the end of the day, or they may try to, if they can get the majority of their members to vote with them, they
so,
because the mayor presents a proposed budget, the city council has the final say.
No, I get that part. I guess... if I'm Joe Schmo on the or Mary Schmo on the street, and I want to influence either the mayor or a council member to uplift a particular project, from what I've learned today and from past conversations, it's either determined by an interdepartment conversation in the administration with a matrix and a scoring that's not publicly available as of right now, or the insistence of whatever district council member decides to uplift that particular project. But no one really can explain how the original list and how they kind of score things kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because what I've seen a lot of times is that council members kind of like nibble around the edges in terms of projects that they want to fund or not want to fund or put in or not want to put in. But I've never really kind of seen a full, robust conversation in terms of how the list gets created from conception.
That's where the sausage is made.
That's the only administration side.
And that's not done in public purview. It's done.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially a fiscal matter, I would think that should be done in a public forum.
How about this? Is it discussed during the mayor's, I always forget the acronym.
Budget Review Commission?
Yes.
MBRC.
Or is it pretty much baked at that point already?
Is the MBRC open to the public, Jeff?
It is.
The MBRC meetings are open to the public, yes.
Noticed.
Yes.
But is the product already created by the time it gets there?
That I don't know. I've never been to an MBRC meeting.
Really? In all your years?
Never had any reason to go.
Is that a separation of powers thing? Legislative and their executive?
Council Auditor's Office attends MBRC meetings.
Like going to conclave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait for the smoke to come out.
Minus the white smoke.
Those meetings are open to public. So
I get that. So, right. So if we, exactly, Commissioner Tyson, if we want to make a recommendation in terms of how the CIP process can be better understandable for the public, what's the best route to do that if we don't understand the scoring or the conception of how it's created in the first? Mr. Grivey gave that, but not the minute details.
Don't you think that the maneuvering is done in that beyond five column to get things moved into year five to start its trek up the process? Wouldn't that be where the give and take occurs, is in that beyond five column? To see what, it would be interesting to see what is sitting out there in that beyond five column. Mm. And then, you know, because once it makes it into the 5 year out, it's just then it's a matter of it just being digested until it hits year one, correct? How much change occurs?
I don't think it's that cyclical. That may be the wrong word, but
that's the way he described it. That was sort of the pathway, that it goes from year five to four to three to two to the current year. So once it gets into year five, what adjustment occurs to that of projects?
Things get adjusted along the way, as he said, depending on what pops up that suddenly is a higher priority than what we had programmed 3 or 4 years ago.
So something might be in year five this year, and next year it could actually bump up to year one or year two.
If something drastic happens, yes.
Based on some kind of scoring that we don't know about.
Well, it's as always, it's a matter of here's how much money we have to spend, and here's what's on the books for the CIP for this year. And if the Jaguars come in and say, we've got to have this practice facility, we'll put up half the money for it. If you'll put up the other half, then the mayor and ultimately the council have to decide, well, what were we going to do with that money if this hadn't come along, and is that more or less important than getting this practice facility built?
Or a new stadium.
Or park projects. If a developer comes in and says, I'm going to put a $200 million development on the riverfront, would you like to get a river walk built across there and a public park put in? I'm getting ready to build, so if you guys want those things, I'm going to need you to pitch in your money, and I'll put that in my project. So that can pop things up to the top of the list that weren't there before.
When council gets the CIP after it's presented by the mayor, has it been your experience that when they review it, they go item by item, or how do they usually review the CIP project? Granted, it changes by whoever they finance committee chair is, but I'm imagining.
Typically, don't they get half a day of one of the budget hearings? So maybe four hours of discussion of the CIP.
But the entire CIP?
Or is it a whole day? It might be a whole day.
For discussion of $500 million? Whereas the $1.5 billion city operating budget is over how many days?
Or five more days?
Yeah. Over about a 2 to 3 week period?
3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So they don't go project by project, no.
So they just kind of take it on faith?
Part of the CIP day is they talk about the debt affordability study and how much could we borrow.
What do y'all look at? Do you look at this, how it's scored? Would it be appropriate?
I've never been involved in the review. I know there's a couple of
So the budget cycle, as it really kicks up, I assume it's going to kick up probably June the 1st.
Starting now.
The council, the departments have already put in their budget requests to the mayor's office.
When the council auditor's office engages, where are you in that process?
July 15th when the mayor presents his form. It used to be July 15th. They changed it. In July, close to the 15th, when the
mayor presents, then you can officially engage. Up until that time, it's all done within the administration. Don't have any
other than attending the MBRC meetings.
Okay.
Even there, we're just there to observe.
So you have no clue, in terms at least on the CIP, because I'm still stuck on this, how this list gets created.
Me personally, no.
Or does anyone on the council?
I can't speak for others in the office that have more engaged.
Your job is just to review that the numbers they're presenting with the projects that are on this list with the funding that's attached to it is correct.
Or at least is the funding there and, the projects, is it mathematically correct?
Okay.
Adding up things together.
And then when it gets to, when you attest to that, because I always know during finance, you always have someone from the council auditor's office that either has a recommendation to change something because they notice something that's wrong or that everything's okay. And it's up to the finance committee, because they're the ones that really kind of dig deep into it, to really ask the questions about the projects, what's not on there, what they want to include, and then seeing where the money can come from. In your experience, in your experience, because I think like I'm getting to this point. In your experience, the changes that council has made to CIPs, let's just say during Mayor Curry's administration, have any of them been more than 5%, 10%, or are they usually lower than that? I'm just trying to gauge how much change council usually makes to CIPs.
I would say relatively little. I think they generally adopt the CIP pretty much as submitted.
By the mayor.
By the mayor. So now, the changes come along later. Once the CIP is adopted and we get 3 or 4 or 6 months into the fiscal year, then things come along, and that's when the changes are made. It's not so much the week or the day that they're looking at the CIP in the budget hearing.
It's not during the adoption process. It's an adjustment during during the fiscal year.
Yeah.
And that takes two-thirds?
Yeah, it takes a two-thirds vote to
change the CIP,
to amend the CIP.
10 votes, I think.
So
no, it's 13.
13.
So in essence, if I'm, I keep on putting it back here, if I'm a member of the public or I'm part of a CPAC or any other group, what real opportunity do they have to suggest something, since this is pretty much baked by the time it gets to finance?
Well, the time to have the input is much earlier, like now. Like you said, CIP, not CIP, CPACs. The CPACs are consulted on the projects, I guess the ones in their area, or if the CPAC thinks something is needed in their area, the time to ask is in January, February, March.
So can you, I don't know that process because I'm not a CPAC, so.
To bring up, okay, yeah. The
By the time we can figure that out, too late to submit it, or we haven't got the council member enough to get a little support from them. It took 4 years to get one drainage area probably taken care of in a neighborhood. And it took less than $500,000 to fix it. Once we finally got approved. So.
Okay. Jeff, can you put this topic of discussion on the agenda for next month? I don't want to absorb. It's already five. I don't want to absorb.
Yeah.
I'm on it. But I think, oh yeah, it's okay. But I think this is something that we definitely can discuss even more. All right. Auditor's report.
Chair of the commission, the council auditor's office released four reports since the last true commission meeting. Due to the timing though, the reports, four of the reports have not yet been presented to the Finance Committee. So therefore, I will be presenting one of the four, as well as the other two that were deferred. So total of three reports today, basically, that I'll be talking about.
Okay.
Where I left off last month, in the February True Commission meeting, was the follow-up on stormwater fee audit, report number 823A. As a follow-up on our stormwater fee audit, the original audit was issued in April of 2019. This was released on January 10th of 2023. There were 23 issues identified in the original audit. With this follow-up, there were 12 items that were cleared, so 11 items remain. Of those 11 items, some highlights of those, the fees, not always calculated correctly. They're not consistent in their methods for non-residential property or impervious area. Recommend using a third party to assist with the impervious area calculations, and also using information in the property appraiser's system, especially particularly when you're talking about compacted dirt. Satellites, so you've got compacted dirt and asphalt. It's kind of sometimes hard to tell the difference between the two, or gravel. Whenever manual updates are required, having a secondary level of review for accuracy, we are saying that maybe have an automated comparison of bills to the property appraiser system. However, there's still manual adjustments that will be needed when the property appraiser system has an error or impervious area, so we recommend that when there is a manual update that you have a second level of review. We found that ensuring that property owners for new parcels receive notices of the assessed fees as required by the municipal code. We need consistent policies on how the low income exemption is calculated, whether it should be all individuals within the household, and the time frames for the income documentation. Then another issue we saw was enforce the requirement that all 501c3 application seek an exemption from the fee that are accurate, and that once a property owner changes that status and they're no longer a 501c3, that status is removed. Then the last thing we noted, that there are several standard operating procedures that are still needed for all processes, such as the compacted dirt and whatever it's included in the impervious surface conclusion. And we recommended again they update all those policies and procedures. So if there's no other questions, I'll move on.
What was the number on that one?
I'm sorry, it was number report number 823A. Second one is report number 780B. It's a follow-up on the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office payroll audit. It was released on January 31st of 2023. This is the second follow-up of the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office payroll audit, and there were 16 issues coming into this follow-up, and there were zero remaining issues. There was one opportunity for improvement that wasn't cleared, but we elected to waive it. And the reason we elected to waive it is that it relates to the JSO timekeeping system that's slated to be replaced, and it's not cost beneficial for ITD to keep doing tweaks to the system. So once the whole timekeeping, because the city's going through this whole process, we're just going to do a future audit on the entire system again. So there's that one part that we'd have stayed on it until, because, you know, it's just not. So all the items were cleared on 780B, and so this audit's considered closed.
So the new system that they're taking, is that a citywide timekeeping system that they're implementing?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is part of the OneCloud, or is it something different?
Part of the Oracle.
Yes.
Okay.
795B is the follow-up on the Police and Fire Pension Fund bank accounts. This was released on February 9th of 2023. There were six issues. All findings on this one were cleared, and this will be considered final. The largest portion of the findings was updating their procedures and their written standard operating procedures, which they've now done. So we closed this one as well. Then the next month, I'll go over the quarterly summary and a couple of follow-ups for that once they've been presented to the Finance Committee. Also, at the last True Commission meeting, there was a follow-up question regarding the remaining finding that was asked by the chair on report number 787B, which was the follow-up compensation and benefits division audit, and what happened with the unpaid premiums. There were three retirees that didn't get charged. So what happened, I reached out to compensation and benefits, and they reached out to the retirees to let them know that they had to pay the premiums and the back pay. They refused, so we canceled the policy. And so that's what happened with that. There was no ARP funds to pay it or anything like that. I think that was one of your follow-up questions. Their process, they're waiting with ITD to help with the process and with the OneCloud system to fully automate it. But they have made some changes with an extra auditing step to try to catch the DC participants. And then we'll review those with the next follow-up to make sure those steps are achieving the objectives and catching what they're supposed to be doing. So. Okay.
Questions.
Thank you, sir. Any items under the audit committee or legislative tracking that Commissioner Tyson or Day would like to discuss?
Nope.
Okay. I think the only chair's comments that I have is that it probably makes sense, like I said before, for us to talk about the CIP discussion a little bit further. I think one of the main goals that we had when we first had this discussion is trying to bring more visibility in terms of how it's really constructed and how the public can play a role in it. And I think further discussion is needed for us to be able to kind of absorb some of the information that we've gotten so far from finance and from Mr. Long as well. Any other items that any of the commissioners would like to add to the agenda for next month so that way we can tell Mr. Clements now?
I do have some comments I'd like to offer when appropriate.
Sure thing. Go right ahead. Unless there's any old or new business. All right, go ahead.
So There are four of us out of a potential, I think, of 18. The six EPACs, six president, and six mayor. So, and I believe we have a couple of pending appointments. Is that correct?
Two.
All right. So we will then be up to a robust seven. Still far from the full contingent. What would be the process for requesting some funding for the True Commission for a staff director and an administrative support person? What is that process?
Well, I guess there are two ways you could go. One would be to request it of the mayor's office to put it in the proposed budget for next year. The other would be to approach the city council and ask them to create, the council would have to create a position and create a budget and fund it for that purpose.
Okay. And what has been the council's philosophy on funding its staff? My sense is you are all very, very overworked.
The council funds its internal staff, and we staff whatever bodies the council may create. Citizen boards and commissions, special committees, blue ribbon task forces, whatever they create.
And when the council creates those bodies, they don't necessarily create additional staffing to support them?
No, I've not known them to do
that. What would be the, we're in the middle of election season, so, and assuming it's possible that the incoming council president will not be the current vice president, it may be, and then, so, theoretically, after May 16th, when the council begins jockeying to reorganize itself, to continue the transfer of the hierarchy to the next council president, there would also be an election for vice president.
Yes.
And then at that point, after those two individuals have been designated, would that be the time that that leadership is approached about funding positions to support the True Commission?
I would think that would be a good time. That election takes place in late May.
Right.
Council members, there have already been a couple of noticed meetings among council members to talk about leadership for next year. But yeah, that once the election is finally over and we know who the 19 will be, then they will meet to elect a president and vice president for next year.
Even the ones that are not sworn in.
Yeah.
That process begins before they take office.
The 19 for the next term will get together and elect their leadership.
Because after the first election in March, you can bet that the remaining candidates are going to receive solicitations from those prospective council presidents and council vice presidents to solicit support for their candidacy for those positions. All right.
Yes, sir.
What's the process to go through to get, how do you say this, to get the mayor's office and council to do what they put in their commission that they wanted done with the True Commission?
You can't force the mayor to make appointments.
Well, I mean, they wrote the executive order that established it.
We're an ordinance. We're not an executive order. The CPACs are executive order.
So they put it in as an ordinance. So
we essentially have a mayor and a council president who are exercising nonfeasance of their duties.
And for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it goes back to Mayor Brown. It's not just this guy. I mean, even in the previous council presidents, I mean, they didn't appoint all their full contingent. I can tell you every month when I give my report to my CPAC, one of the things I report on are the audit reports. And I can tell you, and I will state publicly, that this city is completely mismanaged. When you look at these audit reports, and, you know, it's just a culture of abandonment almost. And as a taxpayer, you know, I just find it, the private sector wouldn't operate that way. When I was at Barnett and we would have audit reports and I would review the audit reports that our bank auditors would do of every single bank. I was on the distribution list. And if the audit report wasn't reflecting what senior management and the holding company was expecting, within a few weeks there would be a new bank president in that affiliate. That was how the accountability was handled. Of course, we were publicly traded, but we were a, you know, private corporation. We were not a public governmental entity. We were a private entity, although we were publicly traded. And because of that, you have certain requirements under the Securities and Exchange Commission that you have to operate your business in a manner that is reflective of the fiduciary responsibility of the board of directors. And the city council is the board of directors of this political corporation known as the Consolidated City of Jacksonville. So when I look at this coming from the private sector, we have what was the Music Man? We have troubles in River City. So anyway,
I think that in any conversation that we have with a future council in regards to staff or support that they give to commission like ours or other commissions, the natural question they're probably going to ask is, why can't you do this work on your own? And then our natural response is, oh, we don't have the commissioners. And then their natural response was, okay, let's get you some more commissioners. And then that's the resolution. But I think any place where we can go in terms of actually getting the mayor and the council president to make more appointees is beneficial for our commission, because at this point there's not a lot we can do with five people. We can do a lot more with seven. It'd be great if we had 10 plus. I've been on this commission when we've had more than 10 members. I'd like for us to get to it that place again. And I just think we have to come up with some creative strategies to try to get to that point again.
I was on the first True Commission. Mm-hmm. It was created by Eric Smith, wrote the ordinance, and Tommy Hazuri appointed me. And Mr. Clements, I think that was about the time you came to work for City Council.
It was indeed.
And I remember, if I remember correctly, both you and was there a Jordan Logue?
There was.
Right, didn't you both staff the True Commission?
He was my boss, so.
Well, I remember you were always there, and we met. I think we met once or twice a month, and I remember them being morning meetings around 9 a.m. is my recollection. And I was on the very first Charter Revision Commission in 1973, and we met at night. The commission met at night. And Dave McNamara, who was the council secretary, he served as the secretary to the Charter Revision Commission. And then we had three committees of the commission, and we did our work in the daytime. Because I was in school at JU, and so I would have to, you know, kind of cut class or make up or whatever in order to go to the committee meetings. That was how we operated. If this were to be a fully staffed and a fully, you know, with fully all appointments filled, fully filled commission, we would then be able to break up into committees and, you know, do the work and report. I mean, the committees could meet in the interim of the monthly meetings, and then the staff could, you know, assist the commission with the deliberations of the committee by providing information, and that's how things could get done. But anyway, so much for my soapbox.
It's okay. It's worthwhile conversation. Any other commissioner comments? All right, so our next meeting is going to be on April the 6th.
Good Thursday. Is that Holy Monday, Thursday?
It's Thursday.
Yeah, I think it is. Nobody celebrates it.
I don't have my calendar.
Yeah, it's the day before Good Friday.
Okay.
That typically doesn't. I don't think that involves going to Mass only on Friday. Okay. No conflict, I don't think.
Okay. If there's no further business, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, we are adjourned. See you on April the 6th.
All right.
Hopefully with two new commissioners at that point.
All right.
Because you should be...